And good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta. Last Sunday, of course, was the celebrated the feast of St. John Paul II, who, from the standpoint of the geopolitics of this world, was in fact one of the most consequential figures of the 20th century. And often we talk about his spirituality, we talk about the remarkable influence that he wielded at the close of the Cold War, and he's got a host of other remarkable accomplishments. But one area that we haven't spent much time discussing is John Paul II's work as a poet, as a man of literary gifts. Well, my guest, Monica Jablonska, has written Wind from Heaven, John Paul II, the Poet Who Became Pope. And she does take a look at his literary life and other aspects of his personal life. Monica is the, as I said, the author of Wind from Heaven, and she's currently working on her doctoral dissertation on social business. At the United Nations Conference on Sustainable Development in Rio de Janeiro in 2012, she launched her own social business called Nurture the World, which is aims to feed hungry children around the world. And she also runs projects in the United States, Brazil, and Europe. Monica, wonderful to make your acquaintance.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Well, let's just start out with a basic question. Why are his literary and artistic efforts, his reflections and his background, valuable in understanding him as a bishop and as pope?
They bear his soul. Once John Paul II said, they try to understand me from outside, but I can only be understood from inside. Hmm. Poetry and drama bring a great understanding of John Paul II as a human being, as a priest, mm-hmm. and finally as a pope. They also bring understanding of the country he comes from. To understand John Paul II and the pontiff from within means to understand his Polishness and answer the question, how much Poland was in the Polish pope? So his literary work helps us to understand Poland, Polish history, and Polish culture. His artistic work finally brings us to the roots of Polish pope. Poetry and the drama perfectly explain about his life, his philosophy, his faith, his Christian vision, his vocation, his emotions, and his work for the church, world, and people. His artistic work also presents the drama of Wojtyła's own life, the personal and historical experiences that formed him, and the faith and cultural heritage of his native Poland that influenced him and shaped his transformative 27 years long pontificate. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So everything we learn from his literary work proves the deep truth of his words. And responding to your question, yes, Wojtyła's poetry and drama are the key to understanding the Polish Pope, mm-hmm. but also they help us to understand ourselves, our faith, the essence of love, human relations, and finally the personal relation between us and God, the Creator and Redeemer.
So again, this is familiarity with his poetry and his literary life gives us a window to
exactly.
his soul, which of course is vital in the work he did as priest, bishop, and pope.
Exactly, absolutely.
Can you describe a little bit about the Polish literary world that he came out of? What are the broader currents that shaped and formed him?
Well, number one, Polish history. That what really shaped his life, his mm-hmm. personal experiences. We have to remember that he lost his mother as a little boy. He lost his sister. He lost his brother. And he was raised by his father.
Yeah.
So number one, personal experiences. And then the historical difficult moment, the Second World War actually shaped yeah. his life. And actually you can see it clearly. in his poetries and dramas.
So that becomes a defining experience for him, his time during the Second World War, where he worked as a manual laborer in that limestone quarry.
The quarry, yes, exactly.
Did he do a lot of writing during that period? Did he do a lot of poetry?
He was reading a lot, and he was still involved in the theater. He wrote about three. Some sources says that three, some of them five.
Okay.
But yes, I can say that he was all the time involved in this poetry and the dramas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he had lots of meetings and conversations with his friends, including Rhapsodic Theater and his good friend Kotlarczyk.
Okay. I want to come back to the theater in just a minute, but back to the question of the series of losses, his sister, his mother, his brother, and eventually, of course, his father. Poland, the history of Poland is marked by huge losses time and again, and the fight over boundaries, the fight for national identity. Did he see his own personal biography, which was studded with losses, in a sense, did he see that, his personal biography, as in some way representing the history of Poland writ large?
I think that yes and no, because he never speak in loud to Polish people and to the world that his personal experiences and the history of Poland really reflect on his work.
Yeah.
And he mentioned about communism, he mentioned about the Second World War.
Mm-hmm.
He always brought the subject of Polish history in his homilies, especially during his first visit in Poland in 1979. Because he didn't want people to forget about this difficult, not only for Poland, but for the whole world
at
the time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why then in my book I mentioned about the relation between the present Ronald Reagan and John Paul II, because I want my readers to understand this relation and their shared contribution to fall communism, which was really spectacular.
It was, yeah. Yes, it's actually a theme that we've addressed a number of times on this program. A friend of mine, Dr. Paul Kengor at Grove City College, has written on this in his book, The Pope and the President. Give me your impression while we're on the topic here, President Reagan and Pope John Paul II. What was the nature of their friendly alliance? How do you read it?
Well, this was a formidable alliance for God and freedom. Aside from the friendship of those two and the meetings of the minds of unique and great people, it's important to mention about President Ronald Reagan and John Paul II's shared contribution to fall of communism, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the Pope and the President thought that evil called totalitarian communism, by refusing to compromise with it and by seeking simply and with clarity about what they stood for,
mm-hmm.
their relation and then common activities help us rediscover the legacy of courage, hope, and freedom left for us by the two extraordinary leaders with a sense of purpose who are met whether by coincidence or by design.
Right.
So today we look into the past and clearly see that neither the Pope's soft power revolution nor Reagan's hard power challenge could have done the job by itself.
Right.
Each needed the other. So together they provided the keys to victory.
Yeah.
There is also another thing about President Reagan and John Paul II I would like to share with you.
Sure.
They were both men of the theater.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yes.
Yeah.
And maybe we remember that or not, but this is very important. Why? Because theater has the potential to transcend the art of the word and gesture and become the art of the word. So both men recognize this instinctively. In their own way, they use the power of the word to confront evil. it was a totalitarian system that denied the existence of God, a thrift only where human dignity was violated. So the two great men are no longer with us, but our need for moral clarity mm-hmm. and moral leadership remains.
Yeah.
So this is also my book, Wind from Heaven, explains, especially to young people, to young generation, about their relation and about their contribution to fall the communism. Mm-hmm.
They both, would you say that both President Reagan and Pope John Paul II understood that communism had to be defeated? One couldn't live in coexistence with it forever. It had to end.
Right.
Do they both share that?
Well, for sure, John Paul II, I heard his conversation about the communism when I was a student of Polish literature and I spent a couple of years in Rome.
Yeah.
And so I was sort of a witness to his words. And yes, and also I share my information with people from Washington, D.C., who are working for Ronald Reagan in mm-hmm. his administration. And they exactly confirmed that they needed each other. So, of course, we can ask ourselves, so what if or what if not? But thanks God, we had those two amazing people really help us.
Yeah.
And now we can live in free country.
Yeah.
On both sides, either in Poland and America as well, right?
Yes.
And the whole world. Yeah. So thanks God.
Yeah. Now it was
President Reagan, and right.
It's an amazing providential design, which I think people should really take heart in, to know that there are no coincidences here, and that it seems to me this was clearly of divine design. My guest, Monica Jablonska, is author of Wind from Heaven, John Paul II, the poet who became pope. We're going to continue on the other side of the break. I should mention, too, there's a foreword here by Cardinal Stanislaw Stevich, and this is a book that, again, goes very deep into the soul of John Paul II. Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. With me, Monica Jablonska, the author of Wind from Heaven, John Paul II, the poet who became pope. We're taking a look at aspects of John Paul II's personal life, his literary life, and his theatrical life, which are often ignored in tributes to him. Let's talk about his work in the theater. When did he first get involved in theatrical performance?
When he was a very young boy in elementary school.
Okay.
So I can say that the theater was his first love.
Interesting.
And it allowed him to express himself and his emotions and his love to other people and to the world. So he gave it up for his ministry, but he never fully forsook it.
Yeah.
So once, actually, John Paul II said that I must admit that whole experience of the theater left a deep impression on, even though at a certain point I came to realize that this was not my real vocation.
Mm-hmm.
So Wind from Heaven is about the Pope as an actor who belonged in the theater and who belonged in the power of the spoken word. The word that shaped lives, destinies, it changed people's minds
mm-hmm.
and hearts as well.
Mm-hmm.
So his involvement in theater was very significant through his manifold participation as dramatist, theoretician, and for some time non-acting performer.
Sure.
Karol Wojtyła has contributed to the development of a specific kind of theater. his plays are the most important part of that contribution, I would say.
When you say that he's contributed to this idea of the theater, do you mean that he's expanded the role of the actor so that he is now, as Pope, he understood right. that he was on a world stage?
Exactly. Tell you the truth, I found a perfect quotation explaining about his experience in the theater and actually responding to the question why his experience in the Rhapsodic Theater helped the Pope carry out his mission. Mm. So Karol Wojtyła's longtime friend Karolina Kwiatkowska said, I believe that his experience in theater gave him strong voice and magnificent diction, shaped his beautiful sense of gesture, taught him to appreciate the value of a pulse, suitable for homilies. Thanks to Rhapsodic Theater, he developed an ease of connecting with an audience, mm-hmm. and especially ability to express the inner truth in a convicting manner. So I love these words, and I think that I couldn't express better.
Yeah.
So I truly think that Rhapsodic Theater really shaped his life mm-hmm. and helped him to be a pope, a great pope.
It makes great sense to me. Talk to me a little bit about the Rhapsodic Theater and its the fact that it had to go underground.
Yes, exactly. Actually, Rhapsodic Theater and his good friend, Mr. Kotlarczyk, truly believe in the power of the spoken word. So once when John Paul II met Mr. Kotlarczyk, he already knew that they will stay very close to each other and they will be working together mm-hmm. because they both believed in the power of the spoken word and that word that can express everything what is inside. So the power of word was really unbelievable. And I would say that when the young Karol Wojtyła first met theater director Mieczysław Kotlarczyk, he was Wojtyła's high school Polish language teacher.
Huh.
So they met when Wojtyła was very, very young. Wow. It was at this time that Kotlarczyk began to develop his concept of Rhapsodic Theater, initially known as the Theater of the Inner World.
Huh.
So exactly the artistic foundation of the Rhapsodic Theater was the cult of the living and pure word. That was autonomous and even a sort of authoritative in this theater. That means it was absolutely independent from the conventional props of a traditional theater.
Yes.
It was a theater without a certain curtain or the stage, without the decorations, uh-huh. costumes or masks. It was more focused, more spiritual, more inward. This was a theater of the living and pure word. And this is so important to understand. So the primary goal was an active, scenic revolution of the poetic word and its artistic values, mainly stemming from Polish romanticism and post-romanticism, finding a place where word spoken and word incarnate coexist and together enter into a new dimension. An unexpected authenticity. So Karol Wojtyła, who was above a thinker and a performer, mm-hmm. was the pillar of Kotlarczyk's theater of the word, and undoubtedly pondered the step towards the priesthood as he commenced his studies and his focus on the word at the Jagiellonian University. Because we have to also remember that the Pope, John Paul II, was a student of Polish literature at the Jagiellonian University. And he was working on his poetry and dramas on that time as well.
It is fascinating to see. I mean, normally when people talk about John Paul II as an actor, it's passed over fairly quickly that is something that he was involved in. It took courage. It's assumed that he was very good at it. I think you're the first person to have spent time, at least on this program, talking about how the very philosophy of theater, that was the rhapsodic theater, that actually plays into his eventual ability to choose to become a priest, that the goal of his priesthood was not entirely different than the goal of being involved in the rhapsodic theater.
Right.
I mean, this Absolutely. Idea of the inner word is something which, in this breaking down of the boundaries between stage and life, that seems to be a vital part of his early thinking, and it shaped him for the future.
Yes, exactly. So why now we have all these poetries and dramas, I want people to read, and yeah. I am encouraging them. Next year we have 40 years of anniversary when John Paul II was elected as a Pope.
Yeah.
And I think it will be a great understanding of John Paul II, not only as a Pope, but as a human being, as a poet, as a playwright. And I think that all this information and my book might help people
yes.
to understand his life and him as a thinker, as a philosopher,
yeah.
and also understand Poland as a country, Polish history, Polish culture, and what's more important, Polish romanticism.
What is
because
that?
Because we cannot forget
yeah.
that John Paul II took a lot from Polish romanticism, and we cannot forget that we can find pieces of Adam Mickiewicz and influence of Juliusz Słowacki and Cypriot Kamil Norwid. Probably you heard about Kamil Norwid many
yes.
times in his homilies. So exactly, this is a part of the history, which is very, very important to understand.
Does Polish Romanticism differ from what's called Romanticism in Western Europe?
Oh, wow, this is a very broad subject.
Okay.
I will try to explain briefly.
Okay.
Polish Romanticism was grounded in European Romanticism
okay.
as far as its focus on emotions and
okay.
individual love. This was comparable to the French and English versions. Next, like its Italian and German counterparts, it also preached liberal nationalism and unification.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
However, it further developed a distinct strain which reflected the horrible predicament of Poland that had been partitioned by Russia, Prussia, and Austria in the 18th and no longer existent as a state.
Hmm.
So this particular strain of Polish Romanticism called for the resurrection of Poland. And its most extreme, it merged as Messianism.
Wow.
So this literary trend envisioned Poland as the Christ of nations.
Yes.
promised that through its death and eventual resurrection in freedom, Poland would redeem all other nations.
Wow.
So Messianism does have a possible blasphemous dimension. It could have led to the deification of a nation,
oh.
but it didn't because it was firmly grounded in Christianity.
Yes.
So
yes.
neither the Romanticism nor the subsequent generations of Polish nationalism, for sake the Christ, came first before the nation.
Huh.
So yet at the time, the power of Messianism was enormous, and Karol Wojtyła draw from all strains of Romanticism, including Messianism, of course. But it was Messianism proceeded through four generations of moderating and modifying narrative.
Yes, yes. Very, so that's amazing. that's really quite amazing. No, I loved it. I thought that was very clear. We're just about out of time, but I want you to say, what should people begin reading when they want to learn more about his poetic and literary and artistic soul?
I am encouraging people to start reading his poetry first,
okay,
to get a better understanding him as a human being. But I wouldn't forget about the dramas, because they both work together. They are like brother and sister.
Okay.
So I would start definitely with the Jewel Shop.
Okay.
It's amazing drama, but also Thinking My Country. This is one of my favorite poems by Karol Wojtyła.
Okay. Thank you so much. In poetry, Thinking My Country, and in drama, The Jeweler's Shop. Monica, great job. We'll talk again. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.